you know, when I look at people that are from Central and West Central Illinois, you know, I look at the values that are important in this district. People that work hard, play by the rules, strong faith in God, believe in their community a great deal, but they're sick and tired of what's gone on in Washington, D.C. and in Springfield. And I look at those values and think about how do we protect those values on the state level and the federal level. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, living the American dream in this country has always been, you know, leaving it better off for the next generation and the next generation. And if you look at the history of our country, it's always how do we make it better for that next generation, whether it's my kids or your kids or our grandkids. And there's a lot of uncertainty with what's happening in America, whether that's with national security, whether that's with the economy, whether that's what's going on with the current president. There is a lot of uncertainty about the future. And when I think about the future, and again, how we protect those values that are so important to Central and West Central Illinois, that's what drives me as a state senator in protecting those values that make America great.
Much of the last 6 years has been characterized by congressional gridlock. Some ultra-conservatives in the House have said no compromise with the White House and sometimes even fought their own speaker on that issue. What is your governing philosophy? Stick to the philosophical guns, find the best compromise out there and move on? What?
Well, I guess first and foremost, you have to represent the people and the values in the district you come from. And, you know, this district, the 18th district, is a large district. It's a fairly rural district, but it's a very conservative district. And, you know, again, looking at the values of this district, first of all, you have to, I think there's two important things about this job of Congress. One is how you vote is very, very important. So it's not what you say you're going to do or what you put out in a press release. It's how you press that button when you get to Washington, D.C. on the important issues, fiscal responsibility, term limits, national security, illegal immigration, Common Core. I've had a strong record in the state Senate of having a conservative voice on those issues. So I think voting your district and those values are very, very important. I think the second thing is good constituent service. When you call up your member of Congress and you have an issue that's a veterans issue or it's a Medicaid issue, or whether you're a small business and you have a regulatory issue, you know, you need to have good constituent service and make sure and remember that you work for the taxpayers and that you work for the constituents and you have to be attentive to people in this district. And so those are the two things that I think are important about this district. To your earlier question about gridlock, Charlie, I would just say that, you know, I'm going to represent my district and the values in this district. And, you know, I think one thing I've been critical of with Republicans is not laying out a clear vision for how to move the country forward. You know, the Republicans took over the U.S. Senate. We have a bigger majority in the U.S. House, but you would never know because they have not led. I think you have to lead. You have to lay out a vision. You have to show people how you're going to move the country forward, how you're going to grow the economy. How do we make sure that State Farm expands in Illinois in this country, or Caterpillar, or Deere, or ADM, or lots of small businesses? We need to lay out a clear vision as Republicans on how you lead with those strong conservative principles, and I think we need to do a better job of that.
Does representing your constituents ever mean courting a government shutdown?
Well, I would say, you know, I would say I would be very, very cautious about a government shutdown. You know, I think that, again, you have to fight for your principles, whether that's fiscal responsibility or national security or a number of those other issues that I meant. I think last resort should be a government shutdown. I think we need to work together to help solve problems. That's why people send you to Washington, D.C. And so, you know, my governing philosophy is I'm going to be true to my conservative principles, and that should be a last option.
Where is the point at which the deal has to be made, and how do you do it?
Well, I think it depends on the issue and what you're dealing with. And, you know, I guess, you know, one governing philosophy that I have is, you know, and I would have at the federal level, I've had it at the state level, is when you look at the debt we're in the state level or the federal level, I mean, the federal level, $18 trillion in debt. and you look at how we're going to saddle the next generation or our kids or grandkids with that, you know, we have to look through the prism of anything that we spend in the federal government. Is that going to add to that $18 trillion debt, or is that going to bring that down? Because, you know, when you look at the amount that we pay in interest to the Chinese, whether it's 20 cents on every dollar, you know, we have to focus on how we change that trend of bringing that $18 trillion deficit down. And so I look at through the prism of that. And the second thing is, when we look at spending more money on the federal side, how do we make government more effective, efficient, and accountable to taxpayers? We have to always keep that in mind. And I've been diligent about doing that at the state level. And we have to reverse this trend of spend, and getting back to a balanced budget and fiscal solvency at the federal and the state level.
Where should we cut on the federal level?
Well, I think first and foremost, you have to look at entitlement reform. Entitlement reform has to be there. It's the biggest driver in the federal budget is entitlement reform. And you look at how much longer people are living, and that's a good thing that we have a, you know, healthcare system like we've had, where people are living a lot longer, they're a lot healthier. But entitlement reform, when you look at the amount of money in taxpayer money that goes to entitlement, that has to be part of the equation. And I think everything has to be on the table when you look at entitlement reform. So that has to be there, I think, first and foremost.
What are some of your proposals? Does that include privatizing Social Security retirement accounts?
Well, I guess I look at myself. I'm 46 years old. I've paid into Social Security since I've been about 18 years old. When I look at raising that retirement age, you know, me personally, I wouldn't be opposed with raising the retirement age when it comes to Social Security. I mean, I think that's one of the examples of things you have to look at. The other thing that I think is important is, how do we do this in a fair way where you kind of tier it, where, you know, people that have paid into the system that are retired with Social Security, I think they deserve what they've earned up until this point. But a fairer way to look at it is how you tier that, whether you do, you know, a multiple different tier system, people that have just been paid in for the first 10 years or the second 20 years or 30 years. We have to think outside of the box in terms of being creative and being flexible with entitlements.
Let's talk about transportation funding. The gas tax revenue has been falling for years. People are driving less. They're using less gasoline. The tax per gallon has remained steady for a long, long time. So inflation has eaten into its buying power. That funding source doesn't take into account the still small but growing electric car and compressed natural gas vehicle industry. One of your opponents, Mike Flynn, has latched onto this issue and is saying you want to raise the gas tax. Would you consider that?
Let me just be clear. I am not in favor of raising the gas tax over the amount it's currently at right now.
So it's a non-starter with you?
It is a non-starter.
How should the rapidly diminishing transportation trust fund problem be addressed?
Well, I would start with the premise that, you know, taxpayers and constituents are very dubious of the federal government or the state government taking any more money, because we have not had a good track record of spending that money. I think a better way to look at it is, you know, on the state level, if you look at the capital bill that the state passed before I got to the legislature in 2009, they passed a bill that was $31 billion, funded primarily with video gaming revenue, and the programs worked fairly well. The other thing that I would tell you is, when we look at coming up with additional resources, the more we can give locals the decision-making process on that, I think, is important. Let me give you an example. The state of California, in their state legislature, has given the authority for counties, local municipalities, to put on referendum the ability to raise the gas tax. So, for example, you know, if you gave McLean County voters a referendum where you said, hey, we're going to raise your gas tax by 10 cents, and you're going to get four different projects in McLean County where that money isn't going to Washington, D.C., isn't going to Springfield and then being spent back here. It's money that stays here locally and is spent on local projects, and that referendum is given to local voters. I think the more that you can give that decision-making process to the local people here that are making the local decision, that drive on the local roads, I think is a better way to do it. And in California, where they've started to do this, these referendums have passed overwhelmingly when people, again, are not they know that the money is staying here locally and not going to some bureaucracy in Springfield or Washington, D.C.
How about transit funding then?
Part of the problem with the current funding mechanism with the Highway Trust Fund is, money that was originally supposed to be designated to roads and bridges has been diverted to public transit projects in some of our biggest urban areas. And I think that's been one of the frustrations is people pay the gas tax, but the money is being spent on large transit projects in urban areas. And, I think getting away from that giving that authority whether that's the city of Chicago or local municipalities to, let the voters there decide whether they want more taxes for transit and urban transportation projects instead of taxpayers in McLean County paying for urban transit projects in Chicago or New York or L.A. I think, again, that's the frustration with a lot of people.
Your supporters are fond of saying, well, Darren is a lot more conservative than his dad, former longtime Congressman Ray LaHood and former Transportation Secretary. Mike Flynn supporters sometimes even embrace the term libertarian. So it's very easy to run to the right in a GOP primary. How conservative are you, and what kind of conservative do you think the 18th District needs?
Well, I would just tell you, if you look at my record over the last 4+ years in the state Senate, I have a record. It's a conservative record on social and fiscal issues. I'm proud of that record. I've been the chief proponent in the state Senate for 4 years of term limits for legislators. I've been the sponsor in the Senate on that. I've been out in front on fighting Common Core, which I think is an important issue in the state. I've had a strong fiscal record. I voted against all of Pat Quinn's 4 budgets because they overspent in the state. And so I'm proud of my conservative record. I would also tell you that if you look at my record when it comes to ethics reform, I think I've introduced 24 ethics bills over the last 4 years. As a former federal prosecutor, it's something I feel very strongly about. And I'll just tell you one bill, Charlie. I've been a strong proponent of changing our law in Illinois that prohibits legislators from immediately becoming lobbyists. And what do I mean by that? Currently, under our law, you as a sitting legislator can negotiate a contract to be a lobbyist today as a legislator, quit tomorrow as a state senator or state rep, and immediately begin lobbying. In 41 other states, that's illegal. At the federal level, that's illegal. So I've been the sponsor of that bill. Now, if you look at my sponsors on that bill, I have 2 liberal Democrats from Chicago that are on that bill. I continue to work on trying to make that law. And the last thing I'll mention on that is the first day that Governor Rauner took office, his first signing ceremony was taking my language from that bill and making it apply to the executive staff and everybody in the governor's office. Once they leave state government, they cannot lobby for 2 years. Now we need to pass it on the state level.
Do you support federal term limits as well as state term limits?
So my bill at the state level would put a limit of 10 years in the state Senate, 10 years in the state House. On the federal level, I'm a big believer that we need term limits at the federal and the state level. U.S. term limits, which is the national organization, has endorsed me in my race. I've signed their pledge to advocate for term limits at the federal level.
Would do you term limit yourself, even if it doesn't become a part of law?
Yeah. If I'm fortunate enough to get elected, I think serving somewhere between 6 terms and 8 terms would be something that would be appropriate.
Why that? Why is that the sweet spot?
Well, I'll just tell you from my own personal experience in the state Senate, if you look at the state Senate and you see people that have been there for 44 years, 42 years, 38 years, 32 years, and I could take you through the list. At the state and federal level, this was meant as a citizen legislature. So you went to Springfield, as a business person or a teacher or a pharmacist, and you came back to your district. Same at the federal level. And so I think looking at a period of time where you can be effective at the federal level, but also not stay there too long is something that I would advocate for.
The argument against term limits is that tends to cede too much power of experience and knowledge of the apparatus of government to staff and agency bureaucrats.
My argument on that is how much worse can we get in Illinois? is my argument. I mean, we have the worst public pension system in the entire country. We have almost an $8 billion deficit. We have a credit rating that's near the bottom.
Created by lawmakers.
Yes, right, exactly. And so my point is exactly that, Charlie. When you look at other states that have passed term limits, and about half of the people in the United States now live under term limits for their state legislators, Michigan has it, Ohio has it, Missouri has it. I'm a big believer bringing new people, new ideas into government is a good thing.
Darren LaHood is running for Congress in the 18th District. Thanks for joining us.
Charlie, great to be with you and your listeners.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.